time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 9th of November 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 9th of November, David Basham spoke to Waiheke Local Board Chair Paul Walden, and he spoke to Ferry Users Group spokesperson Jan Scott about an about the impending loss of benefits for Fuller's monthly pass holders.
We've got Paul Walden in the studio. I've turned his microphone on. He's got his headphones on. Why can't we just be a phone-in talk-back for the next 16 hours or something? Yes. I'm sure they've got lots of questions to ask you. Well, congratulations, Paul. You were elected the chairperson of the local board last Saturday. Mm. A fine speech.
Thank you.
You covered thanking the previous board. You acknowledged the building that we were in. Mm. You know, my dad fought in the First World War, yeah. And my uncle died in the First World War. And, you know, when people acknowledge that, it's good. It's a good feel. And I think all the speeches were particularly humble, and they were also, I'm sure that's my only listener sending me a text, and I can almost guarantee who it is. And, I thought the speeches were touching. Shireen's was particularly touching,
wasn't it? Yeah.
But everyone's was really, really touching and humble, and, yep. and I was surprised at the crowd. It was quite an older crowd in the parts I was sitting in. Mind you, I had to take the age up a whole lot. I was sitting next to Jim Hannon.
Yeah, nice.
He was there, and you acknowledged him and things like that. It was a very good speech.
Mm.
Yeah, and then Mike Lee.
Yes, no, it was a special day.
Mike Lee did a great speech. And So what's it been like since you've been elected chairman? Has everyone sort of been on your door knocking, we want this, we want that?
No, not really. It's been it's been nice to begin to establish a little bit of order to the way the board's functioning, and that's really where we're at now, is actually working out. You know, we've got our first business meeting on the 5th of December, so identifying areas that we need to get the ball rolling with. This side of Christmas, there's a bit of unfinished business that needs to be addressed, and also the board's got to be looking forward to developing the various plans and things, local board plans and annual plans, and, we're really keen to... we've made a commitment that we're going to change the way that this community is represented by the board, so we've had a lot of conversation about how that's going to happen. It's been a busy time, but it's been really nice to get a little bit of order around the board. We've got a chairperson and a deputy, it's really positive. Yeah.
Yeah, and Shireen, and you guys elected Shireen, and she's not part, she wasn't, although you endorsed her, she's not part of the... essentially Waiheke group officially, which I think was a nice move. It looked like, we're not keeping it all to ourselves. We're spreading it around.
Yeah,
she's
absolutely
got a lot of ability. I mean,
yes,
I work with her on the radio and I know what she's like, and I think that'll be good. Can't resist this, though. You actually have nothing to do, you guys. Now, the week before, there was a letter in the Golf News.
Oh, of course, it's all done. It's a done deal.
Nothing to do. And I thought, whoa, Paul will be interested. Yeah. I must ask Paul. So you're going to have a relaxing time out.
Oh, absolutely. Kicking back, we've just got to prepare for the next election in 3 years. Yeah. And,
So what kind of handover do you... I mean, I know you've been on for half a term, but still, is there a proper handover that goes on to you guys, or do you just get pitched into it?
We've been pitched into it, and I guess that's just the nature of politics in some environments, and that's where we're at. So, a lot of the groundwork is done. The previous local board plan, which we're going to build on and expand on, but some of that groundwork's done. But there hasn't been as such a robust handover process from the previous board. So there's a little bit of picking up pieces. I went into the local board office, and there was a good stack of paperwork. The drawers were all full.
But this is where, I mean, you've had half a term, so you've got some experience. So what's the kind of thing you want to impart to the others, like, so they know where they're going?
So one of the fundamental things for me, it's, you know, once you understand how the board functions and the role of the board, firstly in plan making, which impacts on how, you know, the levels of funding and the work programs that the council officers are working on, that's really important. But then also all of the other decision making that's across all sorts of advocacy things which the local board are dealing with. And it's a matter of understanding, or, you know, the big thing for me, how those business meetings work, and that's where the business is. There needs to be robust agendas. The board members need to be able to put together a notice of motion so they can formulate their ideas and give clear, concise options to board members so we can actually, you know, have solid decision-making meetings. And I think that's where the key is. One of the criticisms that I've had of the old board is that there was a huge amount of business that was done either in closed-door workshops, or under some pseudo-delegation to a portfolio holder. And when you're elected as a diverse group of representatives of the community, it's important that those decisions have been made in a public meeting. And I think for me, what I've been mulling over the last few days is, you know, we've been sold the super city because it's putting democracy back into local government. And yet we're getting foisted into an area of trying to then sub-delegate into portfolio holder positions. And so we've got to work out how we can conduct a lot of business of the board publicly and transparently in open meetings.
Yeah. So you've got your – is this the public meeting, this one in December?
Yes, it is.
All right. I must encourage people. Mm. I've never been before, and I thought it's the last one for this board. I'll go along and listen.
Yeah, good on you.
And it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really interesting to hear things.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, Are you going to smile at the meetings from now on?
Oh, yeah. Geez, I've struggled to wipe the smile off my face. It's, you know, there's...
Because you didn't look, you know, it looked like it was hard work.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's been a challenge, but... It's been a pretty solid apprenticeship in local politics, yeah.
As chairperson, do you have, I know you have special duties, but do you have special duties? Like, is there a requirement of extra time? Like, do you have a semi-full-time job?
Or something? Yeah. I mean, it will be close to a full-time job.
Yeah. Sorry, it sounded a bit harsh. I didn't mean to sound semi-full-time job. What I mean was, I don't think it's a full-time job, but it must be getting close to
it. Yeah, there is a lot of work, absolutely. There's a lot of meetings to attend in town. There is an element of, you know, sort of officiating. There's a Auckland Council ceremony coming up for, you know, new citizens.
Right.
And so there's an officiating capacity there. So, you know, there's some of those sorts of engagements.
So you'll be officiating, cutting ribbons, kissing babies and doing all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, had a bit of practice last night.
Oh, right, you would have too. Boy or girl?
Yeah, baby girl.
Oh, yep. I love it. What does that make it now?
That's number four. It's so two boys, two girls. Yeah,
oh,
so
excellent. Nice. Oh, very tidy.
Perfect.
So balanced.
Perfect.
Totally
family.
Balanced.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've got some experience already. Oh, that's great. And baby home already.
Yeah. Oh, I had the baby at home.
You had the baby at home. Oh, fabulous.
Yeah.
Oh, that you must be so. We didn't expect. I just thought, because I'd heard from the breakfast guys that you'd been a father again. And I thought, you may be in. But that shows you're dedicated to the job. But the baby's at home, so that makes a difference. It's not far to come and you'll be back soon. Mm. Oh, that's great. Four.
Yep.
Oh, you've got two more to go to beat the family I was born into.
there's not too many families around the island with four kids.
No, there isn't. No, right. So you'll be going to town. So you'll be representing the board at some other things as well.
So representing the board at some other things. Also, you know, being proactively involved in business meetings of the council in Auckland. Over things that are affecting Waiheke. So there's a whole, you know, sort of labyrinth of decision-making which ultimately impacts on what's happening on the island here, and we need to be, you know, actively involved in that.
Right. So when's the board meeting in December?
On the 5th.
So on the 5th. That'd be good. Thursday. So that's at the...
Austin Service Centre. Yep.
Yeah, because it's a pretty small room. I was surprised.
Yes.
I thought, you know, if they get a few people here, what's going to happen? But
interesting.
It's a bit small, but it looks interesting. And so you can also access the agenda. Is that Someone said to me, you can?
Yeah, so the agendas get published. So business meetings usually on a Thursday. The agendas are normally available online sort of on the Monday or Tuesday leading up to that meeting.
All right.
And so, yeah, that's just one of those things. You know, we're really keen to have the community involved in what we're doing. So we'll be promoting, you know, the availability of those agendas.
Yeah, because I didn't there's a guy on the radio reads them every week.
Yeah,
but he'll read anything. Right?
Yeah, he's a
mind
shocker,
you,
isn't he?
I'm a bit like that. I'll read the inside of my coat if I haven't got anything else. But I really enjoyed that. It was good to, you know, it's good to watch and go along. And you guys have said, you know, it's going to be open, so you've sort of created it.
Yes.
And but just talking to you guys at the local board at last Saturday, you all seem pretty open about what you want to do, and John was really pleased. He was stunned, stunned that he got in.
Beaming.
I've only been here 2 years, but he, you know, Workbridge was a big thing.
Yeah,
and Workbridge shows that he's got a, because he developed that, and that's a monster for providing work and stuff. And I, because working in mental health, I knew about that.
No, we are very, very lucky. Mm. You know, we've got a stunning, diverse board.
Yeah.
And some incredible talent. And
you know, you've got age, you know, Bex the younger thing, and good to have you with experience.
Mm.
So have you got any thoughts about how you're going to open up to the public a bit more? You're saying, you know, you're going to get out to the public?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the things that I think was pretty key for us, you know, in building to our election result was the fact that we had quite a high profile in the public. So we've had a stall at the Ostend Market, you know, every week for the past 8 months or so. And so we'll be looking at keeping a level of profile there and just being accessible. So one of the things is we're looking to run some clinics, you know, where the board will be available on an evening during the week, you know, or at least some of the board members will be available when people can come and have a chat. Because a lot of the things that you would have seen at the business meeting that you attended a couple of months ago, the public forum items, some of those, you know, probably didn't need to take up a business meeting and everyone's time. They could have been dealt with having a chat or a cup of coffee. Mm. You know, so there's an element of that there. But I think also winning really is going to be being in proactive and not reactive. And I think so many of these issues which are coming before the board are a reaction to something that's gone wrong. And we need to be thinking ahead and actually identifying those areas and supporting the community to be proactive in addressing them.
And making a submission to the board, I could see the people, they were pretty nervous.
Mm.
You know, it was sort of very, very official. And
yes.
I suppose it has to be that way. I mean, you've got to have a certain process, otherwise you'd still be there at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
But people seem pretty nervous and they seem pretty...
Yeah, it can be quite intense.
And I remember sitting behind someone who was doing it, and I almost felt like, why can't I just help them?
Yeah, totally.
Because I don't really get bothered about, and my family say that my tongue's hinged in the middle and it flaps at both ends. I don't have a problem, but I watch them.
Yeah.
And they you know, they were sincere at what they were doing.
Yes, absolutely.
But they just seemed so nervous. It seemed like really quite...
I mean, it can be really intimidating, and I think that's, you know, again, is one of the cool things about our board is, you know, when you look at that diversity that's there sitting around the table and the friendly faces that are there. It's you know, as far as inviting the community to be involved, you know, I think it's wonderful. Yeah.
And there's no harm in saying, look, when you do a presentation, you need to give these things. I mean, there's no harm in that.
Yep.
I mean, the facts speak for itself.
Yep.
If it's not a viable thing, well, then it doesn't go through. But at least they know what they can, you know, we need to know this. We need to know this part of it, what your proposal is, your group is, whatever. I'm just making up this now.
Yeah.
But I know when I'm doing funding, you know, you've got to set out certain things. And I think that would help people. Because they weren't, I mean, they really, I mean, I saw a couple of them there, they were shaking.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think that's, you know, on all sorts of levels. One of the things which I'm keen that we promote in our community is promoting, you know, leadership and encouraging younger people to get involved. And so one of the, you know, the things that I've really had to work on is how to convey, you know, a succinct point or make a submission, you know, in 1 or 2 minutes. And you can do it. And it's amazing when you sit down and, you know, rewrite what you're wanting to say. And by the time you refine everything out of it, you can say a heck of a lot in a very short space of time. And those are the sort of skills that we need to be giving to, you know, all sorts of people that are involved in leadership in our community.
Well, that's what I learned. I went to Toastmasters for years. You've got an opening, a body, and a close. And you never forget it.
Yep.
And you just know those things.
Yep.
And you keep to those. And as I say, you would have learnt, you know, you don't get much time, and you can't. You'll be there at 4 o'clock in the morning if you keep. You've got to be able to hit your point and make it. And I think there's nothing wrong with teaching people to be effective like that. I mean, they did that with the people did that with the Matiatia submissions. You know, people wouldn't make a submission if they didn't have that kind of guidance. Now, another thing that was interesting, unitary plan. I saw in the Golf News. I've been reading the Golf News. Because you guys have said the board's going to be available, and I'm thinking, well, the radio's one avenue I need to read to keep things up to date. And the entry plan, there's going to be nothing over here, according to the Golf News? Is that correct?
So we'll be looking to organise a session on the island with the entry plan team. You know, there are some layers of the entry plan that do affect Waiheke and the Waiheke local board, and one of the things that I'm very conscious of as a community, you know, we're morphing out of having our Waiheke community board, which just looked at Waiheke-related matters. The reality is that this Waiheke local board has got responsibility not just for Waiheke, but Rakino, Rangitoto, Motuihe, Browns Island, Ponui, Rotoroa, you know, this big portion of the Gulf. And the unitary plan is encompassing a marine spatial plan, and all sorts of environmental things that affect our local board area. And I'm really keen that we get our young kids at school and our teachers and our scientists in our community actively involved in all of that sort of environmental business that you know, affects our local board area.
Kids love that kind of thing don't they? They get really into it.
Yeah. Oh, well, you know, we went shortly after the election, Beetle and Bex and myself down to the primary school and talked with the kids and the teachers about the election and, you know, democracy. They were all studying democracy at the time. It was great. So we've got the 20 questions on, you know, marine reserves and marinas and everything else. But, you know, part of that process, we're talking with the children about some of the environmental challenges, which are very real and well documented. And having sat on the local board, I'm very aware of them. But the reality is that neither the teachers at our school or the kids generally are aware of these really serious environmental nightmares that are on our doorstep. And we've got a responsibility to change that. Because I recognise that at the end of the day, you know, we're not going to solve any of these things by having a shit fight as a community. You know, our best investment is to make sure that our children are aware of the issues and well educated, so that, you know, by the time they're, you know, at our stage in life, it's second nature that they know what they need to be doing. So, yeah.
Is it possible to get groups to consult with or to work with? I'm not quite sure. I mean, I know you guys are the board and you've got that, and you can't delegate that responsibility. But is it possible to have some kind of subgroup? I mean, I don't know if you can or not. Naive about this. Yeah. But could you have something like that?
So that's one of the things. So the board, definitely has that responsibility for decision making, and that'll be happening in public business meetings. Identifying stakeholders that have an interest in environmental things. And I think one of the interesting things with this recent conversation over marine reserves is that, you know, unanimously, whether it's the Save Our Beaches or We Want a Marine Reserve group, everyone's saying we want a marine reserve. It's just talking about the location. So actually focusing on something positive that we can all agree on and getting on with it and establishing a subcommittee and, you know, and finding that common ground, we can actually move forward.
Yeah, and what about the marina? I mean, I don't think people are against a marina as such. It's just not Matiatia. It's very precious. I mean, I've been looking at Matiatia since I was a tiny kid coming over all the time. It's pretty precious.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely precious. And I think, you know, as a part of that there, when I think about the motivation for putting it at Matiatia, it's really the only place that you would want to put it on the island if you're wanting to attract people that live off island to park their boats there. You know, so there's, it's for our community, it's lunacy.
Yeah. What's the board? What would the board have the role now regarding the whole process with the environmental court?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty naive about this, and I'm, probably helps interviewing people when you're naive because you learn stuff. But I just don't know. What role does the local board have now?
Oh, well, I think the local board has a very significant role now because I think probably every member on the local board has actually made a submission personally against the marina. And so whilst the local board as an entity has been denied the ability to speak on behalf of the community, the fact that the local board members individually can turn up and represent their views, but also represent that, with the credentials of being a local board member, I think is quite powerful. And I think one of the other things that we are very keen to look at is we can't afford to have the strategic planning around Mātētia and all of our transport infrastructure put on hold whilst we have a conversation which could drag on for a number of years about a marina. So we will be establishing a committee that's dealing exclusively with all of the issues that affect Mātētia, transport, environment, parking, ferries, you name it.
Because it's a big issue, isn't it?
And one of the problems of the super city, one of the challenges is, that whole Mātētia catchment's been broken into a whole lot of different council-controlled organisations and council entities that are overseeing different parts of it. And there's nothing that's bringing them together. And so that's strategically, I see the role of our local board is to bring all of those groups together, sit them down in a public meeting, on a regular basis and demand some performance.
I heard something, I don't know if it's true or not, the guys who sort of handle the wharf, what do they call them? They've got a name for
them. The wharfingers.
Yeah, yep. I must look that up on Google one time and find out what it really means, the title. I hear that they may not have jobs in the new year. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That's an issue that we're looking at presently. Certainly, I recognise the really important role that the wharfingers have. Mm-hmm. And it's not a role that someone that's in a security guard's position can do. And again, this is one of these strategic Mātētia unique things. The reality is, within my business, we used to do some work for one of the earlier contractors that was maintaining the wharf. And the reality is that all of these guys are based off island in Auckland. So, when we had a hell of a storm come through Mātētia and the pontoons came adrift, there was a number of ferries sitting in the bay waiting to come in. And if it wasn't for the wharfingers being able to know who to ring on the island and making it happen, there was thousands of people that just wouldn't have come home that night.
Well, I remember talking to Fullers about something. And he said, no, the wharfingers do that.
Yep.
And I went, oh, these people, and they've got a little office there.
That's
so
right.
They're a vital part of what's going on. I had coffee with somebody, and they told me about this. And I said, I'm interviewing Paul tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll bring it up with him because we were talking about it. I mean, it's not Fuller's job to work on the wharf, and it's not the security guard's job. And if you've got ferries that are getting all mixed up, it's a busy, busy place in the holidays.
And I think more so, it's going to become more of an issue. So just to clarify, I don't think it's it's not my understanding that Auckland Transport are looking to get rid of wharfingers per se. They're looking to restructure the way that wharfingers are employed. So presently it's local contractors that are employed as wharfingers to do the job, whereas they're looking to bring that in-house. So we will be having conversations with them about that to make sure, that the whatever they do is robust enough to make sure that our wharf's going to function properly. One of the issues that we touched on before we were on air was the issue with Mātētia's with Fullers and competition and whatever else. And this is one of the key roles of a wharfinger, and essentially they're the finger on the wharf. They're the people that direct. They have absolute control over whether the ferries come and go. They can instruct the skippers to leave the wharf or whatever. And we've seen this role being actively and rigorously used in the days when we had competition with Pacific Ferries. Where I think at one stage down at Kennedy Point, you had the wharfinger, literally standing on the ramp in front of the ferry, refusing to let it land because it wasn't their time slot. And when we look at the challenges over ferry fares on Waiheke, and Fullers have successfully managed to exclude themselves from the The regulatory environment with ferry fares, and good on them, and on the basis that we've got a competitive service. We need to make sure that we're doing what we can to ensure that there is a level playing field so that we can have some competition. And that's just the reality is, when we had competition on that run, the ferry fares dropped overnight.
Yes, they did.
They literally halved overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an interesting one, because it's a big issue for people.
Yes.
Because I know some people are going to suddenly be paying, I don't know, even if it's a $3, $6 return each day on the buses, it's $120 a month. It's a bit of a cost, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge.
Mm. Yep. I mean, I commuted, but I just walked up the road for 8 minutes, and it was really simple.
That's right.
But it was easy. But it was interesting just talking to people about the buses. It does make a difference.
Mm.
And do you know that no one knows how many people from Waiheke catch the buses on the other side to go to work? They've never met. They've got no way of knowing.
Yeah, interesting.
So we don't know what the impact is or not.
Yeah, I mean, we are fortunate still that that Fuller's are integrating the Waiheke buses with their fares. Mm. And I think, uniquely when we look at our parking challenges at Martyrs here, as a community, we have to think very carefully about how we're moving about this island.
Yeah.
Because we just don't have the capacity here to double the amount of cars that we've got here or whatever else.
So. We have enough trouble with the holidays and even just ordinary days. I know I live in Seaview Road, and if you want to turn right at the end of Seaview Road into Ostend, it's like a traffic jam, an eight-car traffic jam.
I know.
But it's still surprising. You're not used to waiting.
Yes.
But I did, Fullers have said that the monthly pass still gives free transport on the Waiheke
bus. Yeah, that's right, which is great.
That's something. Because, it costs a little bit to travel on the buses.
Mm.
It's not cheap. Okay, well, thanks, Paul. We could chat about this.
We've
got lots of things. But maybe you come in again, or someone else comes in, and we'll deal with some issues and go over it. And it's a good venue to get out there. And
I
know people are really interested. So thanks very much, and congratulations once again on that birth of your daughter.
Yes, baby girl.
Excellent.
Yep. Awesome. Okay. Thanks, David.
You're listening to Island Life. Waiheke people, events and issues. Brought to you by Island. Art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Onirua.
Well, we've got Jan Scott into the studio this morning. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, David.
Oh, there we are. What a good voice. Good production. Jan, of course, often does Island Life in the what? Saturday you usually do?
Usually the second Saturday.
That's right. And you'll be starting in the new year?
Yep.
Okay. So I'll be doing next month, 14th. So you are chairman, president?
The chairman, president of the Waiheke Ferry Users Group.
Right. And that's known as FUG.
Sure is.
So what is the Ferry Users Group?
Well, the Ferry Users Group was set up in the middle of 2001 as a result of widespread opposition to a suggestion that, the imposition of a wharf tax of 51 cents per person per trip. So that meant every time you went on to the ferry, you paid 51 cents. So that's $1.02 per day, and that was a blanket tax that included not the children and elderly. It wasn't ratioed for pensioners or younger children. It was just a blanket charge, and it's still in force today.
So that's a tax collected by Fullers
on behalf of what was then the whoever ran the wharves in those days. On top of that, when the Auckland Regional Transport Network was set up in the early 2000s, they added a 20 cents per person per trip tax for the use of the Auckland ferry T. So that meant travelling from Waiheke to Auckland and back again, it was 71 cents per trip. So that's $1.42 per day, and that's still there. We're still paying that. Everybody is still paying that figure. Quite what it goes to, we're not sure. When Auckland City Council was being disestablished, or rather when the Local Government Act of 2002 was repealed and the new Act came in about 2006, I think it was, the new Act didn't permit service fees to be charged. However, they made a provision allowing the existing bylaws to remain legal until the 30th of June 2008. Now, the Auckland City Council didn't do anything about that at the time, and we challenged it legally, saying that they were illegally collecting these taxes. However, they rapidly changed tack and included the imposition of a passenger access charge, exactly the same cost as the tax, into the June 2008 new licensing agreement for operators. So it's still in effect in a different title, and in effect fullers are the tax collector on behalf of Auckland Council. Of course, they're in a difficult position because if they don't collect the tax and pass it on, then the ATA may not renew their lease to use the wharves. So it's
right.
A tricky one.
Yeah, it's a bit like us and GST, isn't it? We collect it on behalf of the government, and woe betide anyone who doesn't hand it on.
Yep,
it's
exactly.
Not yours. It belongs to the tax people, and you know, the government's not, you can't say, oh, well, we haven't got the money now because we've spent it. You've got to have it.
Exactly. And, of course, one of the reasons why there was such widespread opposition to the imposition of the original wharf tax in 2001 was because when the old Waiheke County Council was subsumed into the Auckland City Council, they handed over a healthy amount in their wharf account, somewhere in the region of between $3 and $4 million, that was specifically to rebuild the wharf at Matete. And when the council, Auckland Council, announced that they were going to build this new wharf at Matete, they specifically stated in the flyer they sent out that there would be no charge to Waihekians or ratepayers because the money was already there. So since that time, of course, we've had the imposition of parking charges. Parking was free at Matete at that stage. And that's something else that FUG made a lot of submissions to Auckland City and the transport people about, because our argument was that Matete is our park and ride. And it coincided with the huge cost of putting in the park and rides facility at Albany, which is free of charge. However, the people in Auckland couldn't get their heads around that, that we, instead of using a bus, we used a ferry, but in effect it was the same thing. So we also got the charge for parking. Now, since that time, Herb Brominyok, who was the transport spokesman on the Waiheke Community Board a few years ago and has been a member of FUG and an active member, he made application through the Official Information Act a couple of years ago to find out just how much money has been, or how much revenue the council has got through collecting parking fees and the wharf taxes. And the total amount at that point was $14 million. Where has that gone? What is that being used for? Mm. We used to meet on an annual basis, that FUG used to meet with a group called the Wharf Users Group, and that was representatives from wharf users all around the Auckland area, including Great Barrier and the likes. And we'd meet with Auckland City. And Auckland City at that stage would give us a financial report of the income and expenditure on wharves and all of that sort of thing. However, that changed, and they changed their accounting procedures, which means that Auckland City now revalues its assets every 5 years and applies an 8% cost of capital and depreciation, which means that the Matete wharf will never be debt-free. We'll always be paying for it. It's absolute madness.
Right, so that's something that I know the local board was talking about, getting together the users of the of the wharf, and maybe it's something that they can get involved in. So does FUG still meet? Is it? I mean, it seems like I haven't heard about it lately.
No, exactly, because it's sort of ended up with just half a dozen of us who've been there since the ARC was built, and we've sort of just got on with it. In fact, we've been a bit remiss in that sense. We should have a public meeting to discuss these things and have a proper AGM and perhaps get some fresh blood on board and some new attitudes, new ideas, which is always good.
But you used to have a fundraiser, didn't you?
We did. Now, that was something that if anybody's old enough or has been around commuting long enough would remember that Fuller's used to have an annual Captain's Club cruise, which was free for Captain's Club members. And if they wanted to bring a partner or whatever, it was $10, I think. And we'd cruise around, do a circumnavigation of the island. When FUG started up and we were trying to raise funds to fight the wharf tax, Fuller's offered us that cruise as a fundraiser. So we gladly took them up on it. And they provide the ferry and the staff free of charge. And whatever we charge for to go on the cruise was sheer profit.
I've done a couple of them.
Yeah. Yep. And for whatever reason, we haven't done one for a couple of years. So we will probably look to do one next year because they're good fun. And the last time we did one, we had a reasonable amount in our bank account and no sort of foreseeable reason to be using it. So we used the funds, we split it, I think, between the Women's Wellness Group and the rescue helicopter. Yes, so that's it's a good way of getting together and like-minded right. people.
So if anybody wants to get involved with FUG, what do they do?
Well, they could contact me. My phone number is 372-8096.
Right, and you can... it's always good to have some fresh energy, isn't it?
It is, and I think perhaps we're probably getting a bit close to Christmas and the mad season, so maybe come the new year we'll have a public meeting and just to give everybody information on why we're there and what we've been doing and to air what the issues are coming up.
So one of the things that's been in the local papers is the monthly pass, which you get from Fuller's, and that then translated into you getting free buses on the island, which is going to stay.
Yep.
But from the 1st of January, is it?
I believe so.
Yeah, that you will no longer have a free bus in town.
Yep.
And that affects you as well, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't have far to travel. I go up to Parnell, so it'll be $2 per trip, so it's $4 a day for me. But anybody still, going further afield...
Well, it's still $80 a month, isn't it?
Yeah, roughly. It's just over $1,000 a year. So, but anybody going further afield, over the shore or out to Papakura or somewhere, I have no idea what it's going to cost them.
No, and of course people have come to rely on that.
Yep.
And it's historical though, isn't it? It goes back to the days when Fuller's were a bus... We're owned by a bus company.
Yep, that's right.
And they're no longer by a bus company, are they? Infratil sold them to somebody else.
That's right. So that the only since that time, I think they bought out Howick and Eastern buses, but that's the only bus company they're involved with now, apart from the one on the island that they own outright.
Right.
So our understanding is that, and we've been involved in conversations with Fuller's. We meet with them at least twice a year, unless there's something urgent that we need to talk to them about. And this whole issue has been sort of bubbling away for the last three or four years, ever since the idea of the hop card came in. And Artnell has always had the opinion that the hop card should be a one-size-fits-all over the whole of the Auckland Council area. Our argument was that Waiheke is unique, and quite different because everybody gets on at the same point and everybody gets off at the same point, unless we go via Devonport, which is not usually on the commuter runs.
No, that's,
we're talking commuter. Yeah, I'm talking commuter runs.
You can't just hop off at Rangitoto or anything.
No, that's right. And therefore, we were really concerned that the upshot was going to be that. You could imagine the chaos if people on the 8 o'clock ferry, for instance, had to tag off as they got off in Auckland. We were really concerned that that might happen, and we'd actually started, we'd got together a campaign just to fight that when Fuller's assured us, no, we'd tag on, but not off. And a lot of, well, from our understanding, the whole issue has been driven by Auckland, by ART, or Auckland Transport as it is now, wanting to introduce a one card for the whole region. Now, while that sounds like a great idea, I was talking to a friend a couple of nights ago and he pulled out this wad of cards from his pocket and he said, okay, I used to just have the Captain's Club card. Now he's got his gold card, he's got the Captain's Club card because, you know, if he wants to buy a beer on the ferry.
Yep.
He's got a hop card. He's got an at hop card through the changeover. And there was one other that he had. I forgot. Oh, the 40 trip ticket. That's right. So now, instead of one, he's got five. How bizarre is that?
Mm.
It really hasn't worked, has it?
No, it hasn't. It's just added a whole lot of cards in.
Mm.
And so, what's going to happen? I mean, the hop card's coming in. Nothing's going to get postponed about the hop card. They've postponed it so many times. I can't see them postponing it again. So is there anything that can be done about this loss of the free bus? I mean, I know that the argument is that Fullers pay for that. I mean, people did probably think it's just free, but it's not. Fullers got billed for it by the buses. But if they can't record it, they're not going to be able to charge Fullers. So, I mean, that's what I had explained to me.
I understand that Fullers are working trying to work out something to accommodate the Waiheke travellers. But of course, that won't happen until after, you know, the process won't be finished until the hop card has come in. One of the things that Fullers one of the reasons why Fullers didn't want to or didn't see the hop card as being appropriate is because it would restrict them to what they can offer. Like, for instance, they offer same-day deals and that sort of thing online. They have a number of different structures of fares for tertiary and all of that sort of thing. And that would be more difficult to incorporate into the hop card scenario.
So Fullers aren't part of the hop card, are they?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I think Paul said they opted out of that.
They kept out of it.
Yeah. But I think they were. So it's the hop card's got to get established. And they talk about the heritage things they have. In other words, historical arrangements. So any of those that were heritage ones, like the bus companies inherited, were all going to go.
Right.
And it just happens that that one for Waiheke. And I know I had a look on Fuller's Watch on the Facebook, and it suggested it keep going, but Fullers can't make them keep going. I can't see how the bus companies are going to agree to it.
No, well, that's in the lap of the gods, I guess. But from my experience, it is difficult the bus drivers don't always put the correct information into the system when you show your Captain's Club card, for instance. On a number of occasions over the last couple of years, they've just seen me coming and assumed I was a gold card, and which, of course, thoroughly brassed me off.
Yes, of course. It's an insult.
Bit of a reality call, but there you go. So they don't always put the right information in. If they did, maybe there'd be more accurate figures.
Mm. Well, there isn't any figures, according to Fullers. No one seems to know just how many people actually avail themselves of that. I mean, people have spoken out. Mm. I know of three people, but I had a big sum quoted to me, you know, well over $100. Somebody must travel some distance. Mm. And that's a big suddenly it's you know, you've scheduled it into your budget for commuting, and suddenly it's not.
When you think of it, David, $100 a month. I was saying earlier that just for me going, I think it's virtually one stage. It's going to be.
Yeah, you got
80.
To Parnell, don't you?
Yeah, it's going to be 80. So that $100 is not taking you much further out. So as I said, anybody going out to Papakura or over,
yeah, I think
shore,
it was $180. I heard quoted.
Yeah, exactly.
It was quite a lot of quite a lot of money. Yeah. So that
indeed
makes a big difference. So is there much we can do? Can we gristle at somebody?
At this stage, that's one of the things that we've, you know, the FUG has found frustrating is that Artnell is a faceless,
and that's the Auckland Regional
Transport Network.
Network. Artnell. God, we're in a. What do they call those things when they make up names? What's it called? It's got a name.
Yes, it does.
Is it? There's a school teacher out there.
Acronyms.
Yes, that's the right. Yeah. Always ask a school teacher. You can always tell a school teacher. You just can't tell them
just
much.
To being Auckland Regional Transport now, or Auckland Transport. It's a faceless organisation. We've never been able to find a person to talk to.
There's a person quoted along with yourself in an article, and he's got a name, but he blames Fuller's, and Fuller's points to him, and I think Fuller's are not wanting
game,
to point the finger at anyone really, so they're being
that's politics, I guess, and it is a political situation.
So really, it looks like it's a bit of a.
Well, I think it's gone too far down the track now to really change it. It would be interesting to know how many people do use the buses in Auckland. It's something that we've never really thought about. I suspect that, you know, as a ratio of the total people commuting, it wouldn't be that great. But
there's quite a few people catch the train, I understand. But once again, they don't know the numbers of that either.
No, that's right. And that's not included in the Captain's Club anyway. There are a lot of people who use the train.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for coming in. And it's one of those things we can't seem to be able to do much about because it had an inevitability once the hop card was going through, because the bus companies won't record it, and if they can't record it, they can't bill Fuller's, and therefore they're not doing it for nothing. Well, and I don't think people realise that bus trip wasn't free. Someone did pay.
Yes.
And the people who paid were Fuller's.
That's right.
So it's not free.
Right.
But it's free to the people, but Fuller's did pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that information won't be collected with the hop card.
No, that's right.
So we've got to see what happens.
Maybe
something might get done. It's got a little while to go before it comes in.
It does, but as I said, I think what FUG needs to do is call a public meeting early in the new year, just air some views, get some ideas, and hopefully get some fresh faces on board.
Okay, well, thanks for coming in, Jan, and you'll be back on the air in the new year?
I hope to be,
right.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know me, I was volunteer to come on, so I'm always available.
You're doing a
great job. Oh, it's a pleasure. I just love it. It's the highlight for my pretty sad, really. This is the highlight of my week. That's pretty good.
It's not sad because it's such a great thing to do. You meet lots of different people.
I know. I've got a sculptor out here now, born in France, coming in to chat to me. So,
he'll liven things up for people who've been.
We will play some
bored, rigid.
Yep. I think we've done fine. So.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.